Hey, folks, welcome to the post game. Sorry I shouted. I should probably bring that level down just a little bit. Welcome to post game 11. Hey, David, how are you doing?
Not too bad, man.
So we just got a little bit of a snack in us, and now we're ready to watch some funny clips. And yeah. Now, Amazon Alexa is a product that baffles me that people would invite into their home. Like,
yeah.
I'm more likely to invite an actual Dracula to cross my threshold than an Amazon Alexa. But it is, it has been subject of two of the funnier YouTube videos. One is Steven Crowder asking Alexa.
What was this?
This is, oh, I'll have to find this maybe for later, but Steven Crowder, we did this on the old TMBS. Maybe it was on MR. But Steven Crowder and his buddy.
Holy shit, I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
Comrade Ben Burgess is like trying to get into the show.
Oh, wow. Can you bring him on?
I don't know if we have the technology for that.
What if he just like shouted?
I'm just saying he just called. I don't know. He probably doesn't know we're doing a show right now.
So I'll play this. I have this. This is from October 4th, 2018 of Crowder and Michael's doing the clips. That might be a fun little trip down memory lane. But so first is more recently is this clip of John Oliver going on Jimmy Fallon. Now, I don't watch John Oliver's show a whole lot. I think he does some good work. But, you know, it's, again, it's not really, it's not my thing, right? Like, I've a little bit graduated that. I will say I really liked his podcast, which was, I think, although some of the politics there were a bit edgy too, or iffy too. But anyway, he is the type of guy who can't just go on, like, he has a somewhat of a reputation to uphold. Mm-hmm. So Jimmy Fallon, for some reason, invites him on to do this weird-ass game with the Alexa, where you have to make the robot say a certain word. So right off the bat, the first one was leprechaun. How do you get it to say leprechaun? Well, you ask it, like, what are examples of Irish stereotypes? You know, what's the Notre Dame mascot? And finally, Alexa says leprechaun, so that person wins. There's a little bit of a break in the action here, and John Oliver starts, you know, bringing in some of the more topical things to do with Amazon that somebody who does a news program might, like the labor conditions there. And Jimmy Fallon is absolutely not comfortable with that turn of events. So here is John Oliver. Let me actually, sorry, I just want to make sure you have the sound so you can hear this. And here is Jimmy Fallon getting very uncomfortable riffing with John Oliver.
Correct. You got the refrigerator Perry.
That's a bit too fast. Sorry, folks. I was watching sped up.
Absolutely. The Chicago Bears, that's the only greatest team in the history. I have it. Ready? Alexa, where are the Beatles from?
The Beatles is originally from Liverpool.
Oh, nothing offensive you want to say about that, Alexa?
She doesn't just say offensive things.
About Scousers that you want to throw in? Speak from your heart, Alexa. Your rotten heart. Oh, my
God. This is clearly not a commercial for this.
Oh, in which case, I've got another one. Alexa, how bad are Amazon working conditions?
Alexa, stop. Sure. Alexa, stop. Here we go. All right,
Alexa. No, Alexa. Alexa,
no,
what is
no,
union?
No, Alexa, this is me time now. Alexa, stop. Stop, please. Alexa, please listen to me.
I mean, isn't that amazing?
It's really amazing. That's funny that John's trying to get him going too.
Yeah, no, I John Oliver used to have a podcast called The Bugle, which I thought was hilarious. I knew a lot less about the figures that he would satirize. He would often do like Ramzan Kadyrov, who I think is worth disdain. But I think he also might be one of these guys who would go in for Pink Tide leadership.
Oh yeah. Oh no, right? his AMLO Lula stuff.
Right. But I just love that moment of the so they don't, I don't know if they have the audience there or if it's the producers laughing, but that moment of like, this is too far, and like, Alexa, what is unionized, like that. The only good jokes, really, that are going to be made in that segment, and Jimmy Fallon has to be anxious over it because, you know, that's, you're an NBC guy.
It's something else, ain't it, though? Like, I mean, Jimmy Fallon is sort of, out of all of them, probably one of the worst, right? Just because he's, like, the most company man.
Yeah, well, he famously razzled Trump's hair during 2015 and got a lot of blowback for that, and then basically said he's tired of that things had to get so political. And, I mean, Seth Meyers does basically a John Oliver-style show now. Fallon would rather, frankly, you know, get sauced and talk to celebrities, allegedly.
Unless he really has a drinking problem.
I think it's a pretty open secret that he might have a drinking problem. Yeah. Wow.
Not to cast aspersions, but I'm just saying, everybody.
Yeah, like a guy who's like averse to getting political might be useful in a position like that. But anyway,
that's pretty funny. I mean, honestly, if John Oliver is like, you know, who is pretty accepted by almost everybody, mm-hmm. right? If he is getting you into trouble, you really just become a cardboard cutout of a person.
Yeah. What do you think about the overall reaction to the Bessemer fight and how, like, I mean, I will say, like, I think you could have had a much more cynical reading about how some of these figures could, particularly Biden himself. Reacted to it. Like, I'm just curious where you're at on that.
I mean, look, I don't think it's like anything that supports the union is a good thing, right? And like, showing folks that they have like community support and nationwide support is a really great thing. So I don't know, it's like, it's not worth it to get into questions like who is the purest of fans of Bessemer. You know, I think most people in this, you know, like most people in this country support unions as like as a concept. Think that people should have a fair say. It's very obvious what Amazon is. Right. So I don't know. It's not surprising. And I think you should chalk that up to really good organizing to make this into a national fight instead of what it was. I mean, when we first started, like, obviously everyone on the left was like going to be paying attention to this, but I'll be honest, I've been a little surprised to see how well known this fight is now nationally.
Yeah.
And that's good organizing. That's good fighting. That's you know, that's on them. Hell yeah.
Yeah. Another just quick clip. More deal with the right here. Representative Lee Zeldin. I don't know if he's from upstate. I think he's from upstate. Maybe he's from Long Island, but from New York. He didn't vote to certify the election for Joe Biden. He's one of these Republicans who, you know, had questions about, you know, votes coming from certain communities. And whether they were fraudulent or not. So, I mean, I don't recommend anything Politico does, really. I think Politico,
you can go ahead and do that.
Politico's basically like, God, taking a stab at characterizing Politico for people who aren't super media literate. It's like, there's always an agenda. Planted there by political operatives, right? Like, that's who pitches Politico.
And like, Politico has a section in their like daily newsletter of like the birthdays of like important people, right? Which just should go to show to you like who the target audience is. There's like, oh, this is a person who can brown nose today and remind them that it's their birthday, that you know that it's their birthday, right?
Right.
That being said, like, Politico is not the worst place to scroll for like good tips or to see things as they're starting to percolate.
You have to know, you have to know that about.
But analysis, I would steer clear.
Right.
Because you're getting analysis from people who, again, are spending, I don't know, like, DC is like, I'm sure like people have heard the joke, like, DC is Hollywood for ugly people. Like, Politico is filled with like serious fanboys of that system, and it's exhausting and gross and horrible.
And, you know, so one thing I think is, as long as like I think it's a good state of affairs that those types of fanboys look at the Republicans, the MAGA type Republicans, which is a huge chunk of that party, with this type of disdain. So I just want to applaud this good work by these political. I think it's Byron York, and I'm not sure who is in the middle. But anyway, here's how this interview goes. It is a little bit testy.
Yeah, Joe Biden is the president of the United States.
So he says Biden is the president. The question is, did Biden win? Okay, so you can see a little bit of semantics at the start.
Yeah, Joe Biden is the president of the United States, and that's how you become the president of the United States.
But won the, I ask it very intentionally that he won the presidential election.
Yes. And then I went on to continue an answer. If you'd like to give my answer for me, you could go ahead and do that. But I thought I was going to be here to answer my own questions.
No, I'm not getting your answer. I'm just saying you said he is the president, and I was asking, did he win?
Okay, you're asking me now for a third time, and I've said yes twice. So I don't know how many more times you want me to say yes and what your agenda is, but really it's a bit ridiculous.
Did he win? Like, that's not a yes or no question anyway.
You'd be asking me a third time. Please go ahead and ask me again.
Just clarifying the answer to make sure that he has it right.
You have a fourth time. I mean, I don't know.
I wouldn't call that a question.
Go for a fifth time next too.
Is every time I speak a question? We could keep going.
Sure, let's do it a sixth time.
Congressman.
Hell yeah, dude. This is Meltdown Monday shit. Like, I love that, right?
Yes. The answer is yes. Do I believe he won or is he the best? Yes.
Man, I mean, they're not sending their best.
It is. Oh, man. It's funny to get stuck in something like that. Like, where you can't, he literally can't say yes. He won the presidency.
I mean, but that's some coward stuff. Like, honestly, like let's just play the game for a second. Let's imagine that, like, you know, you are just one of these little swamp creatures, and like you need to get in good with, like, you know, Donald Trump and all the little gremlins out there. Do you think that this, like, Politico interview is going to be the one that sinks you? Right. Like, this is what I'm saying. It's like, this is not a high profile, no offense and, you know, no like judgment here. Like, it's not like we're big or anything like that, right. But like, this is not a high profile. Like, this is like a Zoom interview for like Politico's what, like daily, like podcast or, you know, weekly show or whatever. Right.
Mm-hmm.
This is not going to reverberate across Trump country. So it's like, it's funny. Like, it's funny, like your point about like how the Republicans have to do this, which is hilarious.
Yeah.
But it's also actually funny to be so scared that you can't even just, like, you know, plausible deniability in this thing. It's like, you just say yes. Right. Or
yeah, I guess it's a good question. Like, does he have to worry about some other Republican saying, hey, look at this guy said Joe Biden won the election? Or, I mean, if you're right, like, and he actually doesn't have to, that's also very interesting, which is like, I mean, that's not how you operate as a politician. If you're afraid of something like that.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying. Is it's just like, he has really, like, the thing that's interesting about Trump is like, he destroyed the Republican Party, right? In the sense that, like, he just dominated every person in it.
Yeah. Cucked them all, I think is the technical political science.
But, you know, the thing is, like, some of them are, like, sort of swimming back, right, into their little role. Like, little Rubio, little Marco, you know. Hell, even, like, honestly, probably one of the slimiest Republicans, and he's getting the reputation now for it, but Lindsey Graham, who has just survived era after era and is plays a different role, you know, every administration.
Yeah.
You know, he's even finding his own way in, like, the post-Trump world, right? To be, like, you know, C-grade Republican is actually probably a very difficult thing to do.
Yeah, Lindsey Graham is a great example of how none of this shit really... You can
do whatever you want.
Yeah,
man.
None of this shit matters.
Like, he was saying, he was, like, threatening to run against Trump again.
Yeah.
In the general... Yeah. Right. And honestly, like, and then who is that cuck who ran for them in the general in 2016? Evan something.
Oh, McMuffin.
Evan McMuffin just fell off, right? Like, just
yeah. What happened to him? Honestly,
I'm just gonna look
it
up.
He couldn't even get on.
His name's not Evan McMuffin. It's McMullen.
I know.
Oh, he's an American investment banker.
Does he have anything to do with the Project Lincoln?
Because I feel yes. I bet. Yeah, I bet he was in.
He was Lincoln before it was cool. Let's go to the Left Reckoning questions.
Yeah.
Live show Q&A.
Before we, let's do a couple questions, then we got to come back for this awesome Biden.
Okay, we'll get through a few here. My oldest friend and battle buddy wants me to be on the board of a 501(c) is founding to try and influence veteran psychiatric care using substances to break down the barriers that PTSD tends to erect. I'm simplifying it, but my role would be developing and managing their political strategy, and I'm curious whether you guys feel that these sorts of groups are useful and necessary, or if you think they are distractions and diversions from better actions. I think it sounds like a worthy thing to be doing, personally.
I mean, look, there's a system of, like, allocating resources. I mean, I don't know about... there's a system of allocating resources and like legal apparatuses, and there's ways to influence it. I don't know.
Yeah. On your left, Trump came out on TV and said the vaccine was safe and effective to his supporters. Was it real, or was it a Chinese deep fake designed to make sure we all received the mind control potion? It's amazing that Trump like kept it under wraps that he got dosed with the vaccine before leaving office. It's like, don't you tell anyone? It's private. It's private information. Eakin Erkin, David, sidelining Heidegger's awful personal politics. I appreciate the ontological project of being in time, especially on what Heidegger calls discourse. The socially active norms which we comport towards while actively shaping them. Following your Sartre talk, do you also see that phenomenology might play for Marxism? I'll just say about being in time. I remember reading that in college. And I don't remember the discourse section so much, but the section on care made me completely rethink how I think of like caring, which is interesting. But I mean, you do have to preface it with his politics, I guess. But what do you say, David?
I mean, for sure, like all of those traditions have a lot to say, and like people should be ready and willing to engage with them. I'm trying to remember where this comes from, but it's like, especially even like to come out of something in criticism, but having gone through it, if that makes sense, like spending time with like a school of thought and then saying, okay, well, I reject it, but not just in the way that a lot of people, this is like a hypothesis, right? But I have like a suspicion that a lot of people will, like they learn like the way that you can discredit a school of thought. And that's like the reason why they never engage with that, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. Right. And I think it's always a lot better. Not just because like you're a better critic or anything like that, but I think it makes you a stronger thinker to like go through and then say, okay, well, this is why I don't think this is worthwhile. But I still understand all the things that built up to a certain point. Right. So like the whole thing doesn't create like your worldview or whatever.
You can form the critique yourself a little bit too.
Sorry to take too much of a sprint away, Erican, from that. But like, yeah, I don't know. It's like, I think that that's something that's worthwhile. Like, I don't know, like if you have the opportunity to really study philosophy, especially continental philosophy, I will say I'm biased on this kind of stuff. It's a very worthwhile endeavor.
Yeah. Okay.
Because like, not to go on thing, but like the Sartre stuff is cool. It's like when I opened up the talk, it's like, I was a big like existentialist. I was very big into Sartre, and like more and more, I'm finding myself moving away from like that kind of philosophy into trying to be, I don't know, not to make anybody mad, but like, you know, I'm doing like more Panitch and like Lenin and stuff like that. Cause I'm just like very much like thinking about these questions. But I love that like part of myself when it pops up in my head and can give me that extra bit of analysis that you just won't get if you ignore everything else.
Right. Well, speaking of Lenin, I am the lobster hierarchy. How would Mao and Lenin handle shitty NBA refs?
That's again. I wish I could. I don't know.
Yeah, I think it's hard to riff on that. I feel like.
I mean, I know that I think Mao would be more likely to be a troublemaker on that than
some refs,
right?
Yeah.
Like Mao would probably be very, very frustrating to deal with in any kind of like organized, in the obviously the most like caricature version of Mao that we can imagine.
A Maoist referee though would be very funny.
Yes. That would be that would be very, very good. I would prefer to see that. But Mao was a bit of an athlete. I believe Mao was like a junior Olympic swimmer, whatever like the kind of equivalent of that was.
Interesting.
And God, was it Khrushchev? Sorry not to go, but there's a very funny story, and I might be getting just completely wrong. It was Khrushchev or maybe somebody else, but one of these Soviet leaders like couldn't swim. So Mao like gets, you know, when they come to visit, Mao says, you know, they basically set up their first meeting to be in a pool, right? and Mao again being like this great swimmer is able to do like, you know, it gets in the pools like doing backstrokes and all this other stuff. And the Soviet leader, who might be Khrushchev, but I might be wrong about that, is like in there with like little like wings, you know, like little floaties to be, yeah, be in the pool, stuff
it
like
sounds
that.
Sounds like Khrushchev. I imagine like Brezhnev could swim pretty well. Robin comments, I've heard some people saying that if the pink tide manages to rise again, there might be an attempt to form a regional union similar to the EU. Do you think this is a feasible possibility? How do we avoid regional unions being an engine for austerity? I mean, I think like Lula talked about a lot of that regional cooperation. I think that would be the goal, like the more these you know, governments that can be taken out of the control of the right and back into, yeah, pink tide hands.
But it's like, I would imagine the reason they're asking this is because they're thinking about the EU, but think about the difference between the EU and what they're trying to develop. Like mm-hmm. the European Union like originated out of like coal conglomerates, right? Like it came out of like private interest extractive industries that were trying to create favorable conditions across the continent of Europe that then developed into the kind of political and economic union that we have today, right? So that had a very specific like class character, but that's not something that's inherent to larger like regional organizations, right? That's something that's inherent to the way that the European Union developed.
Interesting. David, what local movements in Austin do you plan on following? Well, it's a good little, I guess, preview to our Seneca conversation.
Yeah. I mean, you know, on Sunday, we'll be releasing a conversation I had with Seneca Savoy, who's an Austin DSA and also does work with, Homes Not Handcuffs, which is trying to defend, you know, a lot of the gains that have happened when it comes to like for like gains for the houseless community in Austin in particular, right? Because you had this move with like moving money away to bolster, you know, programs to house folks in buying the hotels. And then you also had, you know, the end, and Seneca, you know, talks a little bit about this too, like not calling it the camping ban because like the rules are actually much more extensive than that. But, you know, basically making it illegal to be without a place to sleep. And, you know, not only allow you to be harassed by the police, but essentially just like be arrested. There's some nasty groups in Austin that are trying to return to that system and actually make it probably even worse than it was before. So there's a big organization push right now to vote no on that in the upcoming May elections here. So definitely check out our conversation on Sunday.
David, what are your thoughts on Edward Bernstein? I think he gets a ton of bad rep within left circles. At the end of the day, he was still a Marxist and socialist. What did he get right and wrong?
I'd have to come back on that. I'm not like prepared to go through that history right now.
Another word from Mr. Edwin. Matt, I think that we sometimes tend to overestimate the tactical strength of the right wing. What kinds of contradictions exist in the current coalition? And how do you think that the current American left can capitalize on a right-wing movement that's currently panicking about Dr. Seuss? Well, I think from a like a labor perspective, like, I mean, I think it's you're right in saying I think the right is a sort of weak in terms of tactics right now because of this focus on this bullshit. And I think where it comes into focus with Congress, at least, is no excuses for not doing the big things. Mitch McConnell's going to come out here and say he's going to do all this stuff if you get rid of the filibuster. And I personally think that if you get rid of the filibuster, pass the PRO Act, $15, and H.R. 1, that you don't have to worry about that stuff as much. But regardless of the electoral, I mean, I think that's what you have to point to is like, I'm not so convinced that like I think we talked about the weaknesses of this coalition last week with CARP, right? But I also think like we talked about Trump and what he did to the Republican Party, like they might be in the wilderness for a little bit. And so as far as the left, I think the left needs to not be sort of apologetic in terms of asking for what it wants. I don't know. What do you have anything to say on this, David?
I think what you're seeing with the right wing is very much similar to what's happening with the left wing, which is like everything is just going through this interpretation of culture war, right? And it's interesting. Like, I really highly suggest people read Matt Carp's piece, also the damage piece that we pointed out earlier too. Is like, you know, class realignment has led to very funny politics. So is it an opportunity? Potentially. But the opportunity just has to be, we have to rise to the occasion to be able to beat both of these forces. Because I don't think that the right is in as much of a disarray as folks, sometimes make them out to be. It's like, yeah, it's a lot of stupid shit. As Mitch McConnell would say, you know, like just up until recently, it's like, I don't know what people are talking about, crisis for the Republican Party. We have the presidency, the Senate. We've been able to do a lot of the things that we want to do. Like, the right wing is very powerful in this country.
Yeah. They like that.
Because there's a machine that props out a bunch of bullshit around them doesn't mean that they, you know, don't know what's going on.
Yeah, I mean, on the other hand, it's true that there is a difference in the sense of you mark where the right was in Obama's administration with already like the Tea Party in motion, that guy doing his famous rant, and we don't see that yet. I think like there's an attempt, especially recently, to make the border that.
Yeah.
I hope it doesn't work, I guess is all I have to say. Do you want to get to this? Let's do a few more questions, and then we'll get to this Biden on Irishness. Again, from Ekin Erkan, David and Matt, who are your favorite comedians currently? I personally like Stav from Cumbtown and Tim Dillon, who coined Governor Meatball. I heard David once say Governor Meatball in reference to Kissy Kissy Cuomo, so wondering if you like Tim Dillon too. I gotta say, like, Tim Dillon, I've heard he's funny. I gotta say, I saw him, he talked with Candace Owens and it was very, lame. And
well, he's definitely like a right wing guy,
but I don't know if he's, that's the only, like, I haven't seen him as like a comedian. I've seen him as a guy talking to Candace Owens and it reminded me of Chris Farley when he's like, oh man, you did, and then what happened? Like that guy, and then defending the interview saying like, did you even listen to it? It's like,
that's a good drop.
Yeah, but I think I might have heard him on other podcasts. It's funny. My favorite comedians now, I don't know, comedy's kind of in stasis now, stand-up anyway. I am a fan of, I always mention YKS Go Off Kings. I also like Cumbtown. I also like Bodega Boys. Those are the three comedy podcasts I listen to every week, I would say. And then like a lot of the stuff related to the Go Off Kings stuff. But stand-up-wise, I just watched a Cat Williams, Pink Chronicles. I don't know which volume it was, but it was one on Netflix. And he has a joke in there about Iraq, the Iraq War, and saying how, like, it is fucking hilarious. Like, Cat Williams is a very, very, very funny guy. So I don't know. Like, if I have to watch stand up, he's just so entertaining. Very entertaining, so it might be Cat Williams.
Man, that's tough. One, I've listened to some Tim Dillon, and some of his stuff is very, very funny. I'm not like a huge fan or know much about his catalog, so I can't talk too much of the Governor Meatball stuff. Actually, my friend was just saying that all the time. I had no idea that it actually came from somebody else. I just thought that was funny.
What scene was Tim Dillon from? Was he in like shows or stuff? Or like, I don't know.
He has a big podcast, I think.
Mm. Okay.
And he has a very, very funny bit about, it's actually very funny, like, because I guess he's sober. Okay. But he's talking about how, like, when he was a really bad alcoholic, like, his drink was like the gin martini, and he talks about how to make it and all this kind of stuff. And the whole time he's also just like roasting a couple of the other people who are on the show with him, who also, I guess, are sober. And he was just like trashing them because he's like, what did you drink? And they're like, you know, just like light beer or whatever. He's like, you fucked up your life for like Miller Lite. Which is so
that funny. Is funny.
So he's like, he's definitely good.
Interesting.
I'm probably not getting enough, but like I pretty much, I'm saying like it's not expansive. Like I pretty much just listen to your Kickstarter sucks like to like an extreme.
Yeah,
I find that to be very funny.
I listen to those and the thing I like about those shows is I can go back and you wouldn't think there's replay value, but I completely forget that I heard any of that shit. But might have something to do with, you know, my toxicology, but.
There's like 200 episodes. Also, like if anybody's listening to this, who is a fan of YKS, there is an episode that I've been trying to find. And if anybody knows which one, you know, where it is, I think I tried to find it with you one time too, Matt. It's where they get this guy on your Kickstarter. They, you know, it's like one of the Kickstarters, and it's like this guy creates this like box to protect you from radio waves that you can put in your house. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if people like, actually, you know, another comedian, you know, obviously, like we both love like Tim and Eric.
Yeah.
And those guys are amazing. But it's like a Tim and Eric kind of sketch with like, you know, it's like Dr. Sand kind of person. This guy, like, not only creates this insane box that obviously doesn't work, right? But it ends up raising like $2 million or something like that. So they have to have like a reveal for this insane technology. And they have this like insane video where there's all these people like at some conference room in Florida, like clapping. They're so excited, like an Apple event kind of thing, to see this box that protects you from radio waves. But of course the founder can't show up because, you know, it's too insane. So they video conference him in, and it's like they make it seem like he's dying. Again, this isn't this is a comedy podcast, but this is like a real Kickstarter thing that happened.
Right.
And this guy's just like, thank you so much for seeing my dreams. Right. Is, you know, obviously the guy's made $2 million. So he's like on some island in the Caribbean or something like that. Anyways, I've been trying to find this episode of YKS. So if anybody knows what that is, please send it to me because I've been wanting to listen to it again.
You might have to tweet to the out of context YKS Twitter.
I've thought about it, but it feels like an embarrassing thing to do on Twitter. I
don't know. Yeah. Sometimes you just got to dive into it. That's the next.
Also, how do you describe that too? Like that was my best like stab at this. It's insane.
Yeah. I love that show. It seems most liberals are keen to dismiss the entire working class, working poor as dumb, racist, and right wing. How do you think the working classes actually break down in terms of political affiliation in much of the Western world? I don't know to say outside of America, but I mean, I don't think the working class is ideologically right wing to a severe extent. I think you have pockets of it. But I think it's, I think it's whenever, it goes, I think Nazi hunting is interesting, but it's when it's looking for Nazis in power and not the Nazis next door. And I say this, you know, say like, if you actually have a Nazi next door, you can be vigilant about that person. But, I'm way more interested in, you know, Peter Thiel and who he's giving money to and what kind of shows he's bankrolling, then if Americans are too reactionary for social democracy, right? Yeah. Which is, I think, how that
which is BS, by the way,
of
too.
Of course, yeah.
It's like it's just a complete nonsensical argument that like only goes to serve some of the most powerful people in the society. I mean, I think, I don't know, like for me, these things are like feel less academic because it's just like my life, you know, it's like, you know, I'm from that class of people and it's like my family, my friends. We're just like everybody else, you know? And what we're experiencing right now is a period of extreme class de-alignment. You know, we all identify as a, like, this is something that's so good about Panitch, I think actually, is that he makes this point. It's like, you know, the goal, like socialist politics, like our idea is that we get people to identify as members of the working class, but there is a whole scope of like identities that we have from like rural to urban, you know, Southern or Yankee, right? You know, basketball fan, football, whatever, right? And like, we all have these things that are competing in our heads. Like the idea for like socialists is to make that realization of like, oh, you're a member of this working class and this is a huge political opportunity. Like that's where it fundamentally is for socialists. And I think a lot of socialists sometimes struggle with this idea that they think that like class politics are like pre-made for us instead of a process, you know, something that we construct, right? And also just to throw a little cherry on top of that too, I'm actually very much convinced, by the way, by Dustin Guastella's, argument about the American working class. When it comes down to like these social issues, the American working class is probably the most advanced in the Western world.
Mm. Right. Yeah.
We should do this Biden thing and then come back to a couple questions, maybe.
Okay. Cool. Yeah. But
do you have it, or I can share it with you? Because this is just like shit posting. Essentially, it's very funny. I don't even know how. I mean, I guess this guy's.
I got it here. I'll put it up, and you could read it. Maybe.
I saw this on Twitter the other day. I thought it was very funny. Matt Visor, White House reporter at Washington Post. So it seems very legit. I wish I knew more about it. It's just very funny to me because like. Joe Biden, I don't think we've seen like his, we see a little bit of his wacky stuff. And then obviously, you know, he loses his train of thought a lot. He tells a corn pop story, things like that. But he's, you know, he's a little bit more protected than Trump was. It's always nice when you see that little glimmer. It's like, oh, Joe Biden is just as wacky as Donald Trump.
Oh yeah.
So this is Biden. I guess you have it up. I can read it for folks. President Biden going deep on Irishness of his family, recounting his memories of Aunt Gertie, two things in particular. She was the best back scratcher in the world, man. And no offense to the Greeks, but she made the best rice pudding in the world.
No offense to the Greeks.
This is a great way to talk in general.
Yeah.
It's amazing the stories you hear growing up if you're Irish. One island, not much bigger than South Carolina, gave so much to the world. He notes holding up a book about the architect of the White House, James Hoban. People have gotten a chance to see we've been on the other side of as an Irish race, Biden says. That is, they've gotten to see the systemic racism that still exists in the country.
Jesus, someone get him off that topic, please.
It's a funny good thing. I mean, say Irish race is very funny. to just casually throw in the Greeks is also like extremely funny to me too. Are there a lot of Greeks in Pennsylvania or Delaware? I can't imagine.
And are they like sort of proprietary over rice pudding? I
so apparently the Greeks make good rice pudding.
Okay.
I mean, yeah. I don't know.
I mean, but like Biden is like you hear.
But who's he talking to when he makes that reference about the Greeks? Like that's what's interesting to me. Like who gives that reference, right? That's like what I want to figure out.
Yeah, it's like this is how politicians used to talk about electorates and to like you might even talk to like a Polish newspaper, right? Like they and it's like hasn't updated it at all. We saw that in the leaked conversation with the black leaders on Zoom, where he really thinks of these things in the kind of the old, you know, it's like, okay, now the Mexicans got a bigger seat at the table, got to make way for them. You know, and it's going to be you guys, you and the Mexicans. It's like, okay.
Man, it's how Biden never dies.
Yeah. No.
It's just constantly just like reminding us of where this country was like 60 years ago.
So, yeah. I mean, him and Trump are kind of representatives of where these sorts of people have been. Okay. Yeah, I'll do a couple more questions here from... do any of you think Bolsonaro should end up where Inez is now, meaning in jail? Well, I think we know what the answer to that is. What would you put on the top of the charges, I think, is the more interesting question. But yes, I think we're both in agreement that he should...
Oh, I mean, justice. I hope he goes to prison for every bit of, you know, everything that he's done, from destruction to the Amazon to the COVID deaths, all that. But problem among them, I would love for there to be justice exposed, implicating Bolsonaro for his, I guess we can say whatever because it's Brazil, but, you know, for what seems to be a very clear role in the murder of Mariela Franco.
Yes, absolutely. That'd be a great one. That would be amazing. Question from Tim LaSalle. Are there any books you find yourself coming back to every year or so? Do you have a morning reading routine? I don't read in the morning. I have a morning sleeping routine until after until I have to do a majority report shit. but I interviewed one of the authors of books that I come back to, Limbaugh. But I think, but other than that, like we talked about this on a previous post game. I think any book worth its salt is a book that you'll come back to at least once. Every year or so, I wish I could do like for fiction, Mason and Dixon by Thomas Pynchon every year, but I just don't have time. Or Moby Dick, for instance, but you just don't really have time to do that stuff.
Are you a big Moby? I guess you are a Moby Dick fan.
Moby Dick is all time, yeah.
Yeah.
Great, one of the greats.
I think I read Moby Dick like in too insane of a fashion the first time. I might have to give it another.
How did you
read it? Like I read it randomly in like snippets, just like all over. I was just, like when I was bartending in DC, so it's like, you know, random, like on the bus, like in between. Like I was never in a good headspace to like follow.
I read it on the perfect scenario, which was on a cruise that my grandparents played for in the Caribbean. And it's extremely funny, which you don't expect because everyone says comedy doesn't age, but like the humor in that is very funny. I think he's Melville politically, I think, is awesome. And I don't have a grasp of it entirely to summarize it, but very interesting stuff going on under the surface of, or in his real life and when he wrote all this stuff. But, yeah, like Moby Dick, the way it gives you an actual sense of the importance of that industry, like whaling and, you know, all these chapters, which are like either anthropological or scientific or whatever, that go into, yeah, whale oil, you need to light, it's for illumination, basically. And I honestly, it's like nothing I have learned in sort of like through Marxism would make me like want to write any kind of a different book. Like that book is exactly what I would want if I would write a novel now, knowing everything I know now. If I could sort of, what it is, it sort of synthesizes a lot of mythology Americans knew and put it in such a stark way that it teaches you about the world you live in. And yeah, I think it is. I can't recommend Moby Dick enough.
Hell yeah, man. It's gonna be exciting.
Yeah, it's great. I really love it. Post-pandemic, do you think you'll ever speak at events, universities, public venues live? And if so, will Boston be in the mix? I will just say, if so, Boston will be in the mix because, you know, it seems like a good one to go to. But it seems like kind of a long way to plan out yet. We don't have any, at least I don't have anything planned out.
No, I mean, you know, I'd be happy to start doing stuff as soon as, you know, it's feasible for sure. And I love to go to Boston. I always felt bad I wasn't able to go see that town. I've never been.
Yeah, I've seen Salem, but I've not seen Boston. hey, guys. Is from Joe Snuffy. Have you considered streaming a multiplayer game with folks from the LR community? Oh, and I volunteer Providence as a place to host an LR live show. we have lots more cool stuff here than in Boston. We have thought about that, and we would probably do something like that in the future. I don't know. David and I have played Sea of Thieves before.
Yeah, which is really fun. We were sad to find out that you can't have, like, you can only have, like, three or four people with you.
On your crew, yeah. But, like, I think something like Rust or, I don't know, let's see what kind of rig. It's like a Fallout type of game where there's, like, but massively multiplayer where you can craft stuff and, like, make forts. Mm.
You and like so crafting games.
I do like crafting games. I mean, to be honest, I say I like them, and I like Valheim, the new one that everyone's playing where you play as Vikings. Yeah. I bought it, and frankly, I just don't have time to play. Those games can take up so much of your fucking time. Like, when I was unemployed, Minecraft got a fucking lot of hours of my life.
I'm trying to think. Just give me a second. I was trying to play this insane, like, space game that just came out. That, like, oh, fuck. I'm sorry to, like, waste everybody's time. It's like something called Epic or, like, shit. It was just, like, it was so over the top. Like, you basically, like, it's like a massive universe. It's like open world game, but it's just extremely technical. Most of the game is like you just like shipping like, you know, whatever you want in your, you know, in your ship from like galaxy to galaxy. Mm-hmm. And it's very like RPG, but like hardcore RPG where you're like a lot of times like looking at screens with like numbers and stuff on it.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, I could imagine like this being really great if I could play this right now and understood everything and could immerse myself in this game. But the idea of spending 60, 70 hours just to understand what the hell I'm doing is less and less appealing to me.
Honestly,
I need that kick in the ass. I haven't found a game in a little while that's been like captured me.
I feel the same way. I'm sort of stuck on 2K. And I don't have to relearn that every time. And the actual complexity that they add to it, I could actually like get to at some point. And yeah, Valheim's supposed to be one that like makes it easier because you don't like go hungry and stuff as much. But like, I don't know.
Did you like Mass Effect?
I played the first Mass Effect on 360. I remember freshman year of college playing a lot of that. You know what? It's coming back to me now. I skipped a lot of classes. I did not have a good GPA my first couple of years, and mainly because I just didn't want to go to class and stayed in the dorm room playing Mass Effect. And there was one night I played Mass Effect all night in the dorm room. And, you know, my dorm roommate up in the bunk bed, like, trying to sleep while I'm playing Mass Effect on a little Vizio. I was listening to your Ricky Gervais XFM show all night.
Oh, my God. That is, like, until that's the sun that's comes up. You.
Yeah. Really, like, that was my life then. Just got a mini fridge. I can drink some sodas. And literally the sun's coming up, and it's like, I guess I'm not going to econ this morning.
By the way, just since that was on my brain, the game I'm talking about is called Elite Dangerous. I just couldn't.
Oh, okay. Yes.
Do you know about that game?
I know. Have a you lot played about, it? I have. Yeah, I played a lot of Elite Dangerous.
So I was trying, and it seemed fun, but I was like, I was just stuck, like just trying to figure out how to land on like a space station for like 20 minutes. I was like, you know what? I'm not going to fucking deal with this.
Yeah, it takes a while to learn that stuff, and then it becomes kind of second nature.
I guess, like, I haven't done, like, so I like, the games I like are, like, I love big strategy games. Like, I love the Civilization series, obviously.
Right.
I've been really into CK3, Crusader Kings, which is so much fun, honestly. Like, that'd be a fun thing. I don't know how multiplayer that is, but, that could be a fun thing to do. I like Stellaris a lot too, which is another one of those super nerdy, big like strategy like space games. The first person stuff and like the crafting stuff I've never got into.
See, Elite Dangerous is interesting because what and ultimately it's too much of a grind for me to ever have played long enough to get to the really good ships.
Mm-hmm.
But what you can either do these mercenary things, so you get a fighter ship, which is fun, or you can be basically a trader and you can carry like water or, you know, computer parts, or, and you buy it low and sell high. And you literally go online to these forums that have live automatically updating prices, and you can sort by like what the biggest profit is. And I gotta say, I don't what it is about that, but I found it really addicting for a while. And it's like, oh shit, I can make like $500,000. And it's literally just like you warp to one star, you know, get your, you know, cool your ship down again, warp to another star, maybe go, you know, fill up some fuel, warp to another star, and then go in dock, unload in the menu again. But I must say, once I get VR, that's one of the games I will be going back to, because I want to be in that VR spaceship.
No, I bet that'd be awesome.
Cruising through the galaxy. I think that's everything on questions so far. Yeah, I think we can... anything else you want to get to, David? I do want to also... I want to play out this LBJ thing, but is there anything else you want to cover before we...
No, let's do that. Thanks everyone for listening. We'll play this out. Also though, you know, Sunday we'll be putting this talk up with Seneca Savoy, so check that out. And also, and we're very serious about trying to launch this, like, you know, Thinker series. So if there's anybody you would like to see covered or any ideas you have for that, let us know. I'd be very interested to hear from you.
Yeah. So this is, like I said, back, you know, when I was looking for a job and playing Minecraft, I would also occasionally do these remixes, to, LBJ and Nixon tapes. And I thought it was fascinating to go right to the horse's mouth about, you know, these sorts of policies. And here's this, discussion in August 1964, conversation between George Smathers and LBJ discussing Barry Goldwater's economic policies is antithetical to what LBJ, I think LBJ, calls the democratic type philosophy of economics that made America's business leaders prosperous. So yeah, Smathers was a big anti-communist, like one of the, I mean, senator from Florida. You know, this is right after the Bay of Pigs, so but I'm gonna play this, and yeah, check out the interview with Seneca on Sunday. And
overseas and attacking China and a few things like that to go over before, we're going to swing them back.
The main thing that ruined y'all is his economic policies. He's jerking in here and saving $5-10 billion, and he's pulling out of every foreign country, and he's telling them all to go to hell. And what you do, your export trade that we've got a $6 billion surplus of, you'd be back by God, grass would be going the streets, and these gold guys wouldn't have this prosperity in these jobs.
Winn-Dixie, I just talked to a son named J.E. Davis, who is probably the biggest, most successful businessman in the whole Southland. He owns this big chain of grocery stores, Winn-Dixie and Quick Check and Colonial and so on, the whole thing. Just this minute, I got off the phone with him, and he was saying, I tell you what, he said, I'll be damned if I can be for Goldwater. And he said, my whole program, and I do $1.7 billion worth of business a year. And he said, it's based on the democratic type philosophy of economics, see? And he said, we may have a little bit of inflation. I'd hell, I'd rather have a little bit of inflation than to go back to the days where everybody's pulling in, nobody's buying things. He said it would kill us. And he said,
sir, I see old Stets Coleman sent him $50,000 to Goldwater.
Goldwater, well, I knew he was.
Victor Balsno.
Yeah.
Hitting the Delta planter from, I got a letter from his campaign manager the other day that's raised the money for him. He got $350,000 last January to put him in the race.
Yeah.
And it was from four states, primarily Florida, Mississippi, Texas.
Yeah.
Let me see. Florida, Mississippi, Texas, one other state.
Probably Virginia, but in some.
Huh?
Maybe Virginia. There are not too many big contributors there.
Yes, I think Virginia was. I think Virginia was.
Yeah, incidentally, Raymond Guest still wants to contribute to you, but he still wants to be an ambassador to Ireland.
So, well, how much is he going to contribute?
Well, he'll contribute 50. Maybe we maybe can get more.
He ought to get 100,000, which that fellow's worth.
If he can get it, I can get 100,000.
Well, you just
bargain with you about it.
No, but you just go see what what you can do there, and you can, and I'll have lunch with you.
Right. Okay. All right. Well, I'll talk. And then I'll talk.
But don't you do it on your own? Don't you do it anything you talk to me about? But you just find out what you want, what you're authorized to do.
I'm not going to be authorized to do anything. I'm just going to visit with him.
Yeah, but
I'm more scared of these people than you are.
Well, you realize now when I was telling you about Bobby that and being secretary of the committee and federal buildings and so forth, that there's something to it.
Man, I really do. I'm telling you.
You remember how I used to be about it?
Yeah.
And then I got wound up with all of it in my life.
I went over and talked to her a lot the day before yesterday. I said, Cindy, well, I'm going to tell you something. I've learned, boys, keep that fake mouth shut. You talk too much. And you just got to pull in.